You are listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, the Archaeology Podcast Network is starting a new three-tier membership system in July. All your favorite shows will always be free, but we're offering a little extra for those that want it. Check out arcpodnet.com/members for details. That's arcpodnet.com/members for details on our awesome new member site. Thanks for supporting us.
This is episode 177 for the 26th of June, 2017.
I'm Chris Webster, and on today's episode, Chapter 11, Cooking on the Road, from the Field Archaeologist Survival Guide, Getting a Job in Working in Cultural Resource Management. All right, as I said, this is from the Field Archaeologist Survival Guide, Getting a Job and Working in Cultural Resource Management, by myself, Chris Webster. And this is from Routledge, 2014. I like to say originally Left Coast Press, but now it's Routledge. And this chapter is called Cooking on the Road. And again, this does apply to pretty much anyone that's on the road or even on the road for a little while and just wants to save some money. Say you got a large family and want to go to a hotel room and spend a week there but not spend $500 on food, then take a look at this. All right, here we go. When I first started in cultural resource management, or CRM, my food was all frozen microwave meals and things that didn't need to cook at all. It was a very unhealthy way to live and wasn't satisfying. Most of the time, I'd end up going out for food or picking up something easy. After a few projects where we had cooking facilities at the places we were staying, I think we got used to the idea of cooking in the field. During a long excavation in Nevada, when my wife and I were living in a hotel room for a few months, we found ways to make dinner more interesting. We had a large electric skillet that we could cook just about anything in. And we learned that a lot of things can be cooked in the microwave. Many archaeologists bring an assortment of appliances on the road with them, and others utilize the equipment already in the room. I once cooked steak and mashed potatoes in a hotel room using just the skillet and the microwave. It wasn't fantastic, but it wasn't that bad either. Almost no other topic in this book is as varied and controversial as cooking on the road. There are so many variations that one would have trouble listing all of them. I will describe how my cooking and food preparation have evolved since I started in this business, and I'll discuss how others I've observed have succeeded and failed in the past. I'm sure my first grocery trip on my first field project where I had to stay in a hotel room consisted of microwave meals, dried goods, potato chips, and wine. Not the healthiest way to live, but I didn't really know what I was doing. For 6 months, I didn't prepare a single meal in the hotel room. Everything I had was either a snack or a Hot Pocket. Seriously, I don't know how I didn't gain 200 pounds. Maybe it was the 20 to 40 mile bike rides after work most days. Must have been. Equipment and technique. And here's a couple quotes. Bring food and alcohol from home. And that's simple and succinct from Bill White. And another one, I love my hot pot. And that's from Jennifer McGuire. By the time I had started my second field project, I bought an electric skillet. That changed my life. At one point, even though I overcooked them because I was talking to a friend, I made steaks. My girlfriend and I also had mashed potatoes with that meal. I chopped up potatoes, put them in a plastic container with water, and microwaved them. It had to be done on low power and in 8 to 10 minute increments. I kept stopping the microwave to poke at the potatoes and check for softness. When they were done, I drained the water out by placing the lid and the container partially over the edge and pouring it into the sink. Then I added milk, butter, and sour cream and mashed them with a fork. It wasn't a bad meal for a hotel room. On my second field project, I learned that you could make pasta in a microwave. Smaller pastas like penne and macaroni are best because you can fit them in a container small enough for some of those small hotel room microwaves. Just put the pasta in the container, fill with water to about 1/2 inch over the pasta, and put it in the microwave on medium heat. You'll have to adjust the heat so the water doesn't boil over, or you'll make a mess. Sometimes the defrost setting is good for that because it turns the heat on and off. It could take up to 15 minutes to cook the pasta, but do it in increments of 5 to 8 minutes so you can stir it. If you don't, the pasta will stick together. Rinsing the pasta before putting it in the microwave will help it not stick together as much. So we're putting a little olive oil in the water. And here's another quote. The importance of having a microwave and fridge in a motel cannot be understated. And that's from Jennifer McGuire. When staying in hotels, I was able to do pretty well with the electric skillet, water boiler, and the microwave in the room. Others I've known bring hot plates, toaster ovens, rice cookers, and crock pots. The key is to bring something that has more than a few uses. For example, you can cook just about anything in a skillet. The one downside is that you have to cook large portions because of the size. When cooking a soup or other liquid-based meal, you have to fill up the skillet or the food will burn. Rice cookers are great because you can cook rice in the main compartment and steam cook chicken, fish, vegetables, and other tasty items at the same time in the top basket. Also, they're very easy to clean. And here's a quote. I found rice cookers to be very versatile, not just useful for rice, but they pull double duty as a hot pot. I have even seen them used to bake bread. Buy non-perishables in bulk. The savings may only be a few percent, but with planning, you might find yourself eating better. I always prefer traveling with Tupperware bins to living out of the suitcase or duffel. They come in handy for hiding contraband, like rice cookers and such. Some hotels are twitchy about cooking in rooms. And that was all from Jim Christensen. Hot plates are an old favorite of many archaeologists, but I've never used one. The primary reason is that I didn't want to carry an assortment of pans with me, and they can be dangerous in cramped environments. Trying to balance a pan on the hot plate on the 2 square feet of bathroom counter you get in some rooms can be challenging. I'm sure more than a few hotel towels and napkins have been started on fire from a hot plate that was just too hot and too close. The jet boil system has become very popular among archaeologists lately. They cost a little bit of money, but are very useful. The fuel can on a jet boil could very well last the season since they are very efficient. You can boil water, make coffee or tea, and heat up meals in a typical jet boil. If you buy the accessory pan set, you could expand your cooking options. The jet boil is also great because you can bring it anywhere. Since I got mine, I've been waiting for another cold winter project where I can bring it into the field and make coffee or soup at lunch. The entire system fits inside of itself and is very light, which makes it very portable. The $100 price tag is prohibitive to some, but it's worth it. Check out the French press accessory that you can get. I have one and use it every day on camping projects. The CO2 output is low enough that I use it in my tent as well. A necessity for your cooking kit should include spices and kitchen items. Spices can make or break a meal. Get a few good ones and just carry them with you. Bring a set of silverware and some camping dishes too. I have the C2 Summit plates, bowls, and cups. They lay flat when not in use and can be used as a cutting board. Don't microwave them though, they'll bubble up, and you can't fix that. Anything you can bring from home or buy and keep with you will improve your quality of life and give you a sense of familiarity wherever you go. Preparation. As my situation has changed through the years, so have my cooking habits. I now have a home base in Nevada, which has changed how I bring food into the field. It's rare that I'll need to hit the grocery store when we get to the base town, and it's also rare that I'll need to eat out at all during the 10-day rotation. There are two pieces of field equipment that have changed how I bring food into the field, a food dehydrator and a food saver. With these two pieces of food preparation equipment, I'm able to bring enough food to last me several weeks, and I don't end up spending all of my per diem on restaurants, gas stations, and small-town grocery stores. The dehydrator isn't something you'd really want to travel with because it's big, bulky, and has one purpose. If you have a large vehicle and live on the road, you might make it work, but for most, it's not a possibility. What the dehydrator will get you is a great way to store fruit and a way to make jerky if you are one of the 4 people in CRM that is not a vegetarian. Well, 5 including me. Most archaeologists don't eat enough times throughout the day. We are burning thousands of calories and are eating once at lunch and then not again until dinner, which could be 5 or 6 hours later. Your body goes into survival mode if you go that long without at least something to keep the metabolism up to speed. Eating fruit can help with your calorie intake. The problem with wet fruit is storage. Fruit can take up a lot of room in your hotel room, and it almost always gets squished and banged up in your field backpack. By dehydrating all your fruit before you leave for the field, you'll be able to take a larger volume and it won't go bad. Just keep it in a Ziploc bag that you can throw in your field bag as you run out of the room in the morning. If you have a craving for a banana or an apple, check the lobby. Most hotels have some fruit set out for breakfast. Some have fruit set out all day. Now here's another quote. Use Pedialyte for summer nutrition during the hot weather. You'll need less than if you had Gatorade, and it provides more nutrition. And that's from Bill White. You can dehydrate almost any fruit. I've done kiwi, strawberries, grapes, apples, mangoes, and bananas. Some fruit takes longer than others, but you generally need 12 to 14 hours per batch. The standard dehydrator comes with 4 trays, but you can order more for bigger batches. The other piece of gear that's changed my life is the food saver. They go by various names and styles, but food savers suck all the air out of a custom bag and preserves your food for a long time. Because I have a base of operations, I'm able to make a bunch of meals prior to going into the field. I split them up into meal-sized portions and suck them down into the food saver bag. There are many advantages to this. First, you can fit more food into a smaller cooler. The bags take up less space than containers, and you can recycle them when you're done. Also, the bags won't take in water when the ice in your cooler melts. Another advantage to the food saver bags is that you can cook them a number of ways. You can poke a hole or two in the bag and microwave it. If you have a jet boil or a pan and are camping, you can save on cleanup by just putting the bag in boiling water and heating up the food that way. You can also just take the food out of the bag and heat it up in a pan or in a microwave as well. Either way you look at it, you can't go wrong with a food saver. And here's another quote. After work essentials, beer, and food that hydrates you, like cucumbers, tomatoes, melon, etc. And that's from Jennifer McGuire. A little pro tip that I just discovered is to store ice in a food saver bag. Ice is always a problem in the field. You never seem to have enough of it, and it always melts and becomes useless. I may have found a solution to the ice problem and given you a little more drinking water in the process. All you need is a shallow container and a freezer. My small containers measure about 5 inches by 7 inches by 2 inches deep. I put filtered water in several of them and let them freeze for about 24 hours. Then, after removing the ice from the containers, I suck the blocks down with the food saver. This makes a narrow block that you can put vertically between your food instead of on the bottom for more uniform cooling. When the ice melts, snip the edge of the bag and pour it in your drinking reservoir in your backpack. Or you can refreeze the bag and use it again. The ice technique works on other liquids as well. In order for your food saver to suck down a liquid, it has to be frozen. Otherwise, it will not seal properly. I've done that with homemade soup before. It's a great way to bring soup into the field with you, especially if you have a jet boil or the use of a microwave. If you don't have a dehydrator or a food saver, you can still save money and increase your nutritional intake in the field, assuming you have the ability to pre-make all of your meals. If you can, freeze some of them so they are still fresh at the end of the season. Remember to keep a few of your dinners unfrozen because you'll want those on the first days of the session. It saves power, you know, for the good of the planet, if the microwave doesn't have to work so hard. Finally, if you don't have any way to make food ahead of time, you can still save time and money. Just go to the store and buy pre-made meals. Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, Costco, and most grocery stores have meals that are cooked and ready to go. I'm not saying this is the healthiest or tastiest option, but it's often better than Hot Pockets and fast food. And I'm going to interject a little recipe here before we get into camping, and it's called Noodles and Meat in a Skillet. An easy meal to make in an electric skillet is noodles and meat. There are a lot of variations, so be creative with this recipe. And I'll make a little editorial addition here. This can be made vegetarian real easy. Ingredients. 1 pound of meat, hamburger, ground turkey, chicken, tofu, etc. Ramen noodles, and vegetables. Cook the meat in the skillet on medium-high. Drain the meat. Wash the meat in hot water if you want to remove excess grease. Next, pour in the recommended amount of water for the ramen noodles and then pour in the crushed noodles. You'll want the noodles crushed because the skillet is large and shallow and the noodles need to be fully underwater. Bring to a boil, then let simmer. Once most of the water is gone and the noodles are done, pour in the seasoning packet that came with the noodles and some fresh, frozen, or canned vegetables. Cover with a lid and cook until the vegetables are done. If you want to be really unhealthy, but make it very tasty, put some sour cream in the mix when it's done. If you're storing a portion for later, then add the sour cream when you eat it. Serve with the worst beer in town and have a dinner party. Camping variations. When on a long-term camping project, your cooking options can be slightly different. The biggest variable is what kind of equipment is available, and what do you need to bring? On a camping project some time ago, my company provided a gas grill and water for cooking. During other projects, the company provided nothing, and I had to bring whatever I wanted to use. This section will assume that a wide variety of equipment is available. Tailor your specific needs to the project you were on at the time. And here's a quote. When camping for an extended period, I would usually bring a heaping container of pasta salad or some other cold, cheap food. Then I would make burritos by wrapping veggies, cheese, a little bit of meat, or chocolate and fruit for dessert in a tortilla, wrapping that in foil and letting it warm by the campfire. And that was from Jennifer McGuire. Most campsites have, at the very least, a campfire. A lot of good food can be cooked over or inside of a fire. The key is making sure the fire is well developed and that there are some really good coals burning at its base. For cooking oven-style food, you'll need aluminum foil. Make sure you wrap what you're cooking in at least 3 layers of standard foil or 1 or 2 layers of the heavy-duty foil. The heavy-duty stuff is more expensive but results in less burned food. When you cook food in the coals of the fire, it's generally a bad idea to put the food in direct contact with coals. They're too hot and will cause the food to cook unevenly. Use a shovel, just about every work camping trip will have at least one shovel available, even in the West, to lift up some of the coals while another person tosses the foil-wrapped food under the coals and into the ash just below the coals. The cooking time for food under the coals of the campfire will vary depending on the temperature of the coals and the food you're cooking. Potatoes will take at least 40 minutes, depending on the size of the potato. Corn on the cob can take just 10 to 15 minutes if the fire is hot enough. You can also cook fish, beef, and chicken this way. Make sure the meat gets hot enough on the inside, though. You don't want to get sick with no facilities around. Get creative with your cooking. A potato wrapped in foil with carrots, peppers, garlic, and butter can all cook together and be very tasty. Most campfires won't have a grill across the top of the fire unless you're staying in an actual campground. You might have to go back to your childhood and find a good stick to cook with. I've cooked a steak on a stick, even. It was one strong stick, I assure you. Try to find a branch from a leafy tree. They have less pitch in them than trees with needles. If you have to use a needle-type tree, then make sure you hold the end in the fire for a while to burn out all the pitch. Your meat doesn't need to be seasoned with pine tree scent. To properly grill, either on the fire or on a camp stove, you need grilling tools. Or do you? Someone may bring a spatula and some long tongs, but most likely no one will be prepared. Fear not, you probably have a spatula in your field pack. That's right, a trowel. Even better, a square trowel. Be sure to clean your trowel before using it for flipping meat. You can also use a shovel for manipulating food in the fire. In addition to using the shovel to lift up coals for roasting, you can use a shovel to place and remove food from a campfire grill. If you're lucky enough to have a grill, clean the shovel well, sterilize it in the fire, and you can use it to cook on too. Just place the shovel in the fire and prop it up like a flat cooking surface. You can cook meat right on it. Make sure it's a steel shovel. They handle the heat better. Also, watch the handle. Don't get too close to the fire. And make sure the conductive heat in the shovel head doesn't get to the handle hot enough to start on fire. For extra cleanliness, wrap the end of the shovel in a fresh piece of aluminum foil. Summary. To be truly happy while living on the road, you need to have your food sorted out. There's nothing like coming in from the field and having a tasty home-cooked meal. So what if it was home-cooked 7 days ago and you had to microwave it? Whatever it is, it's better than fast food and likely a lot more healthy. Find your style. Cook what makes you happy. Put some thought, time, and effort into your meals. However long your session is, plan out every single meal and make sure you have what you need. If you're in a town or city, you'll likely go out to dinner with the crew at least once, so plan for that too. You don't want to bring too much because it might go to waste. For me, one of the most important things I can do to keep myself sane, happy, and content in the field is to have familiar and tasty foods at the ready. In fact, it might be the number one thing I do to customize my experiences in the field. And that was Chapter 11, Cooking in the Field, from the Field Archaeologist Survival Guide, Getting a Job and Working in Cultural Resource Management by myself, Chris Webster, Rutledge 2014. And if you want an added bonus, I made a video called Shovel Steaks, and it's on the DigTech or Digital Technologies in Archaeological Consulting LLC Facebook page. And it's also been shared to the Archaeo Field Techs page. And if you happen to be a friend of mine on Facebook, check it out there too. So it's a fun little like minute and 15 second video about making steaks on a shovel with aluminum foil. So check that out and we'll see you next time. That's it for this episode of ARC 365. Please share this episode on your social media sites so others can have fun and learn about archaeology too. Please consider a donation to ARC 365 by sponsoring an episode for just $35. You can find the sponsor page at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/sponsor-ARC365. Thanks and have a great 2017 with the Archaeology Podcast Network. The song Storm Diggin' was written, performed, and recorded by Steve Webster. This show is produced by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle, and was edited by Chris Webster.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.